Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. Our guests tonight are Michael Del Rossi and Setna of Kemet, a.k.a. Michael K. Waterman. And before we start, though, I will read the first part of my review of Hercules Conquers Atlantis, also known as Hercules and the Captive Women. After some good-natured brawling in a local tavern, King Androcles of Thebes, the mighty Hercules and his son Hylas, plus their diminutive companion Timoteo, share an ominous experience. Tiresias, the seer of Thebes, informs them that the gods have spoken and that a peril from the far west, beyond the straits, threatens all of Greece. Unable to rally his fellow kings or their collective citizenry, Androcles gathers an unwilling crew and, with the help of Hylas and Timoteo, drugs and kidnaps Hercules, who had decided to sit this one out. The sea voyage is doomed. Mutiny is followed by storm, then shipwreck. Hercules finds himself alone and afloat in misty waters. After praying to Zeus, he locates an island, defeats the shape-shifting Proteus, and rescues his many, princes of Atlantis. The protected mist that long hid Atlantis from the eyes of intruders is also lifted. Making their way to Atlantis, they encounter many mysteries, and these we will outline in part two of my review. And now, without further ado, we have Michael. Greetings, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, and it's great to be with you this evening.
Great to be with you, too. I enjoyed our last conversation, and I'm looking forward to continuing it tonight.
And I'm excited to be sharing with you. I'd like to start off, as we usually do with our portion of the program, with our health and training experiences, because I think it's all very much a part of everything we're interested in, everything we're doing. How has your training been going?
My training has been going as well as can be expected, given my circumstances. I'm scheduling as often as I can the different medical appointments that are required to schedule. And right now, my lower back is very bad. I started doing some light exercises with high repetitions. And I'm using for resistance hand grips and very light weights at this point. So I'm determined to triumph eventually. But I know it's going to be a long and challenging road. Tomorrow I'll be trying to arrange regular physical therapy. Physical therapy has always helped me. And waiting for some test results. They took an MRI of my back. So I guess as more information comes in and more options become available to me, I will take those. In addition to my working out, such as it is, I've also been spending a lot of time meditating and visualizing and doing affirmations. And I've been in great health, and I've had a very muscular physique several times in my life. So I know what that feels like. So I'm trying to stimulate my muscles through my mind, you know, to, basically reawaken the muscle memory and the energy that I've left to work toward a specific goal. So I believe that even psychologically, that's helping me a lot, so I'm continuing to do it. Go ahead.
No, I'm glad to hear that. The more research I do into the rules and concepts of the law of manifestation, the more convinced I am how authentic it is, especially when it comes to the reality that everything in existence is surrounded by an energy field, and we know that our energy field as conscious beings can be affected by the nature of our thoughts. So I think you're definitely on the right track, and it's an exciting and area of research and reality, I think. So I'm glad to hear that you're including that in your rehabilitation program.
Oh, yes, most certainly, and I believe in it. I've seen it work sometimes automatically. In my unfolding adventures of life. And a lot of times, especially after you become attuned to synchronicities and notice them, how often they happen, sometimes an answer will come immediately. You know, you'll ask the question and then something will be said on the internet or on television or with people talking that'll answer your question right away. And that's a form of divination that the ancients definitely used, you know, just basically talk to the universe and listen.
And I think that they were certainly a step ahead of us in that area because, at least in Western civilization anyway, over the decades, we've lost the ability to tap into that knowledge. And our direction, our attention, if you will, has been elsewhere. But it's an exciting field, and it is very much part of the physical fitness. Where, you know, we are holistic beings, and we're still trying to grasp and accept that reality that we are holistic beings. And so anything that has to do with mind-body health is certainly worth researching. So you make some very exciting points there, and I'm certainly excited about these concepts as we move forward into the future.
As am I, and I'm also going back on my life to find practices that I used to practice and abandoned that worked fairly well. So I don't know why I abandoned them, but there's only so much you can focus on as you move through life. But I used to be a very competent herbalist, not officially.
Oh.
But I used to understand herbs and their dosages and how to make all sorts of different concoctions with the herbs. So I started with herbal teas. And I don't have occult peppers anymore, but I have other books that are similar. So I found that just by using herbal teas, I'm able to affect very many positive changes. And then it's basically with the dosage, experimenting with how many tea bags I use and how often I can use the same tea bag and taking notes. But the medications I've taken for my gastrointestinal challenges, the herbal teas took care of all that. As soon as I figured out how much herbal tea to drink and how often for that, that's fixed as far as I'm concerned.
So you were very much deeply involved in terms of actually using the herbs themselves or the specific teas to deal with various conditions. You really were involved in that.
Back in the early 80s, yes. In the early 80s, I worked in an employment center, and I used to make hot water on our coffee maker. And then I had different types of teas. And I focused primarily on, being energetic and calming down. Because
we can all play a little of that.
Yeah, so whether somebody wanted to calm down or speed up, depending on what they needed to do, I would recommend an herbal tea or a combination of teas, and they put whatever they wanted to contribute in the jar that had the money where we bought more teas. And it was just a very limited number of herbs. Like for the calming down, a lot of them were chamomile and then something else with chamomile on its own.
I don't know why I don't consume more chamomile. I like the taste of it. I sweeten it a little bit. I don't know why I don't drink more of it. I'm glad you brought that subject up. If it's laziness, it's whatever the case might be. But I've always enjoyed chamomile, and I should be drinking more of it. Did you actually work with the leaves themselves?
Depending, like right now I'm not working with the leaves themselves. I'm working with trusted herbal tea companies.
Yes,
and it's good to research them. And I always get from reputable companies, because, again, they're big companies, you know, you could find out about them and, you know, both good and bad things. And I will get different brands that are supposed to address something and have the combination of herbs that I want. And then I'll test.
Right.
I'll test one tea bag at a time, two tea bags at a time, whether I can reuse the tea bag. Sometimes having a wet tea bag for the day and reusing it is more potent than just putting in a new tea bag, I found.
Mm-hmm.
So just experimenting with the dosages and just seeing what happens over time. And as you know, we've had these conversations for years now. If something isn't doing anything, I'll drop it to see if anything changes. And if nothing changes, right, I'll shelve it for a while and then try it again until something proves phenomenally consistent. Like with vitamins, one of the few vitamins that has proven consistent is Ocuvite, the adult 50-plus formulation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding that it corrected a lot of things and now it's slowing down the macular degeneration. So it needs something else now beyond what's in the Ocuvite formula, although that gives me phenomenal results. So I'm starting to experiment with new eye vitamins and seeing what effect, if any, they have. And I'm looking on the internet for what herbal herbs might do it too, so I could add those as well.
Well, you know, that's our destiny. Divinity has provided us with holistic mind, and that's what you're utilizing. And I too have been engaged in that practice. I've had GERD, if you will, a pretty fairly large field of acid reflux for the last 25 years, and I've tried a variety of natural substances. I've tried the papaya chewable enzymes along with digestive enzymes. The papaya works very temporarily. As of this point, I've utilized just about everything, and I can't say from a natural standpoint I found anything that works over a consistent basis. They do work in the very short term. I do get relief. But like you, I'll give it a fair chance, but then if I see it's not happening, I'll discard it for a while. I might choose to go back to it at some point. Acid reflux on a regular basis is incredibly, for the wanting of a better description, annoying. There's so much I can't eat. There's so much I can't drink. You know, it's that burning in the center of your chest and up in your throat is just, you know, it's a challenge. And I have to laugh because you also have to find the irony in these things. As someone who hasn't eaten meat or fried foods for almost 30 years now, as well as dairy, all of that has been discussed. I kind of try to find the humor in this because, yes, I was a heavy coffee drinker for a few years. I did love my coffee. But beyond that, compared to many people, my diet has been pretty boring, to say the very least.
Uh-huh.
But you do what you have to do. And what the irony of all of this is we learn. We're learning. And we can share this knowledge with others, what we're experiencing as far as appears to work, what we may discard. Then the listening audience can take our research and apply it to their own lives. So ironically, with our whatever challenges we're dealing with, someone out there can be helped.
Oh, certainly. I also have acid reflux, not to the degree that you do, but I get that. And I also tried the papaya and other digestive enzymes over time. And like you said, they work, but they didn't work all the time. And sometimes they didn't work well at all. So I tried different things and I shelved them in the same thing that you do. What I found does work more consistently is Tums. And since I like berries, I get the Tums berry flavored. And they work more consistently, but I'm afraid of getting too much of the calcium carbonate that they have in them in my diet.
Well, you and I are exactly on the same path. Tums do work. Tom, I chew a few. I do. The idea of consuming too much calcium is very much at the forefront of my consciousness, if you will. So I'm aware that, I'd rather not consume that much calcium. But there are days when you really don't have a choice. You know, when the burning is becoming intolerable, you have no choice but to reach for them, if you will. But, yes, we're on the same path in that area. Absolutely.
One of the things I found that also works, but I am not yet in mastery of it, is to take certain breaths when you first feel the acid in the acid reflux. I find that if I catch it like immediately and instead of doing anything else, like reacting to it, if I do certain like deep breathing through my mouth, then it cuts the acidity and it doesn't burn anymore within seconds. But if you don't do it right, then it's going to burn and, you know, the tums become very tempting. So I don't have I haven't mastered the sequence of breathing or how long I should hold the breath. But I noticed that one day accidentally, and then I've been playing with it ever since, but I haven't mastered it yet. So as soon as I master it, I'm hoping to, again, cut down on the tums and to not have to experiment with other more natural things.
Well, I'm going to have to definitely try that. I have been on, unfortunately, I guess you could say a regular regimen of proton pump inhibitors, that being mainly Nexium at this point. I don't like it because, especially if you go on the internet, there's not a day goes by that you don't see the deleterious after effects that may be involved in this. Kidney disease, certain cancers, and yet there's so many, and I say to myself, there has to be a better way for those of us who are dealing with this, because it looks like the proton pump inhibitors work. I try to take it every other day, and there was a time I could do that, but I think my stress levels doing what I do have increased to the point, I know that's not helping, where I have to take them almost every day. I don't want to do it. I don't like to do it, but the after effects evidently are becoming more well known. I asked my gastroenterologist about it, and he's an Asian fellow who was familiar with natural healing, but he seemed to dismiss it. He said, you know, the mainstream media likes to overblow some of these things, he said, but, you know, they do work, and he didn't address the issue. I said, yes, doc, but what about the fact that they may cause stomach cancer, they may cause esophageal cancer, ironically enough? And he kind of like dismissed it. So, you know, we're so inundated with information, especially on the internet. Again, this is why I firmly believe in that inner voice. I do believe that we're all equipped with it. In the Bible, you know, the Bible does say each man has been given a measure of faith. And I think once we receive divine intuition, which I think is where mainly the intuition comes from, we'll have to utilize our faith and arrive at decisions what healing modalities will truly help us as we age and we move down the road. So, it's all very interesting and challenging at the same time.
Have you read Beyond the Relaxation Response?
I have not. Did you get anything out of that book?
Yes, it's a book by Herbert Benson, who came out with The Relaxation Response and related books. They were based on Transcendental Meditation, which was popular at the time of the study. And he did a lot of research with it, and he found that regardless of what spirituality you had, and it didn't seem to matter whether you're a pagan, whether you're a Christian, whether you were believing in outer space beings or, you know, whatever you believed, if you had a belief that prayer and meditation could help you, then statistically there was proof that you'd get better. Herbert Benson worked with the placebo effect a lot. And in the placebo effect, as he defined it at the time, 70 to 75% of cures came about because of your mind and what your mind believed was happening. And he pointed to stories like people who were given placebos and yet had total cures, people who were from cultures that misunderstood the instructions and were cured, like I forget what country it was, but they weren't familiar with Western medicine, and they were given a prescription to a pharmacist, and the person didn't know that, so they started eating pieces of the prescription paper. And when they went back to their appointment with the doctor, they were cured. because that's what they thought the cure was, to eat this prescription paper. So he told stories like that to show that sometimes your faith, as you call it, or a strong belief in anything that can cure you, if you supplement that with meditation and medicine, then you know you're more likely to be cured.
Well, I tell you what, I'm so happy you shared that with us, because I absolutely believe that. I believe we're equipped with that. And I like the point that you have made, and we'll continue to make it, hopefully, because I think it's critical that we're it's a mental universe, no matter what you may believe in, whether it be paganism, it's still why do I say it's a mental universe? Well, the very fact that we're conscious beings and able to contemplate our own mortality and meditate is proof enough for me that we're connected to some universal intelligence of some kind. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where, as long as you believe in the I am, and this is what they teach in New Thought Spirituality, and it's so simple, and it's right there in our faces, but we've complicated this reality with so much religious dogma that civilization, at least as we know it here in the West, has been cheated. And they've been cheated by virtually all houses of worship on some level, with the exception of, I think, the pagans had it right, because they knew that the living force behind all things is in everything. The very fact, absolutely. And I'm so excited that you made that point, because we've already proven that everything, inanimate objects as well as the human beings, everything has a magnetic field. And secondly, we find that in our case, conscious beings, that magnetic field can be affected by the nature of our thoughts. You know, this field is still wide open. I'm so happy, thrilled that you've shared this information with us this evening. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much, because what the apprentice shares, part of our conversation has been going on for a while now. So I'm glad if anybody can benefit from it. There's a story I tell to people, because I've been playing with my mind as well as my health and my body for my entire lifetime, is that when you finally realize that you're God, it's a very humbling thing, because the very next thought, the very next realization is, and so is everyone and everything else.
Absolutely.
So it's not an ego thing. You know, you can't not be one with the universe. You can't not be one with the divine. You can't. It's impossible not to be part of the universe. So you're part of the universe already.
It's thrilling, yeah. Well, the Anointed One, Jesus, I think he, to a large part, he tried desperately to teach that, you know. And what the irony here is, most houses of worship in Christianity specifically, they'll teach about how important faith is, but they stop short of the next step, that faith we can actually manifest, not only for ourselves, but for others, through the power of our thoughts and our beliefs on a regular basis. They stop short of that. Well, that may be New Age. That may be considered a cult. There's a real irony here. So yes, they say we should have faith, but don't have too much faith, because in the end of the day, there's certain church rules and regulations that we need to adhere to. So they don't want to encourage you about the reality that power is within all of us. We don't need any outside force. We are the I am. So you know what? What you're sharing tonight, really, it actually sends chills up my spine, because the more you research what the great teachers of New Thought Spirituality shared with us, is so simple and so right here in front of us, but we've complicated it to the point that so many missed the boat, and that's unfortunate.
And fortunately, we're going to continue this conversation on Monday coming up, when we have our Herculean Physique show. If you're free this week, I believe on Friday, I was thinking of talking about the new show with these type of thoughts, these type of information, new thought, And if you're free, I'll invite you to that as well.
Well, thank you. I will certainly try to be there, and I thank you for that invitation.
And we'll also be talking about UFOs on that one, too. And you have an extensive history with UFOs as well.
Well, I'm excited about that. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
And alas, our conversation must come to an end because we're at the halfway point of the show. Michael, how can people find you and become aware of all your great work and explore the world through the doors you're opening up for us?
Well, they can write to me at Michael DeRussy, Post Office Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. With any prayer needs, with any needs they have in their lives, I will be sharing the laws of attraction, the laws of manifestation, and why they can be so real in our lives. Thoughts mean things. And I will write them back with affirmations and intercessory meditation and prayer, if you will, to deal with whatever, help them deal with it, whatever issues are challenging them. So that's my address. That's the best way to reach me. Michael DeRussy, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006.
Thank you very much, my friend. I wish you great success in all your ventures and adventures, and I'm looking forward to talking to you, if not Friday, on Monday.
Thank you, and thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners.
Be well, my friend. Joyous journeys and amazing adventures to you.
Thank you so much.
And now I will return to my review. We ended with making the way to Atlantis. They encounter many mysteries. Just who exactly is the instrument of true deific will in these particular circumstances? Why would Queen Antenea gleefully sacrifice her own daughter? What is King Androcles doing here? Why does he now have amnesia and firmly supports acts of Atlantean imperialism? Why do evil queens always fall for Hercules, and why are they outraged when he predictably spurns them? With the guidance of Zenith, priest of Uranus, the blessings of Zeus, and some help from his companions, including Ismene, Hercules rescues Androcles, rekindles hope in the hearts of doomed mind slaves, and leads an uprising and thwarts the schemes of Queen Antenea, which include gaining personal immortality, plotting world domination, and misusing the blood of her god to create mutants and a master race of manly blonde clones. He also rights many wrongs, restores balance to the heavens, and almost single-handedly destroys the island continent of Atlantis. Greece is saved. Androcles is restored. Hylas and Ismene are going steady. Timoteo is unharmed, and Hercules is in good spirits. Together, they sail toward this rising sun and home. I enjoyed this movie a great deal. Reg Park delivers one of my favorite portrayals of the Theban Hercules. And the many unfortunate appeals to and affirmations of the power of Uranus lend much unintended humor to this fun and mythic adventure. Now, onwards to Setna of Kemet. Greetings and welcome, Setna. How are you this evening?
I'm very well. And actually, wellness is one of the things I want to talk about before we do anything. Hercules,
fantastic.
I was in great pain when I had my condition, which is called pemphigus vulgaris. And I have a meditation I want you to try when you're in pain. I want you to think of a gigantic lever, like something you'd pull a switch. His veins down. And when you are in pain, I want you to focus and see that lever in your mind, and you're going to pull it all the way down, and you will shut off the pain.
And that is synchronistic, because in my meditations last night, the image of the lever came up. I wasn't instructed on what to do with the lever, but the lever appeared in my meditations. I imagined a wooden one, like you'd find on a ship or something like that.
I'm thinking more of like an electrical or a shut-off switch, large one that you're going to bring it down, and it works. I was in desperate pain, and what I had was incurable. However, I'm cured because I willed myself to be cured. My dermatologist will tell you I have none of the cells of pemphigus in my system anymore. And this is supposed to be something that is incurable, but I was not going to have that. And so it's over. One other thing, if you are going to take calcium, do not take things with calcium carbonate. Hercules, that's chalk. What you want to do is take calcium that is from an organic material, which is either from calcium citrate, which is a plant calcium, or you want oyster shell calcium. That your body will then synthesize that much better. One other thing, chamomile tea is also for relaxing, but also chamomile works for digestion. If you take that in combination with papsin, which is papaya, you'll find a great deal much more relief, but also add raspberry tea. And also for your eyes, I recommend you using bright eye or eye bright, excuse me, as an herb along with your other regimen. That will increase the potency of Ocuvite.
Thank you. If you can send that to me in an email or a personal message, I'll could get buying those things right away.
I shall. I was one of the counselors at General Nutrition Centers, and I was their area supervisor, because of my knowledge, for the entire South Florida area for a long time. So that is why I know what I know. In any case, we are onward to Alexander the Great. I want to set you back to 320 BC, which is when he was born. 321 BC. He was an amazing being. This movie came out in 2004. It starred Colin Farrell, who decided to actually peroxide his own hair rather than wearing a wig. The beautiful, beautiful Angelina Jolie. Well, and he had extensions, of course, because he had short hair. Angelina Jolie. The amazing Anthony Hopkins, who plays an older version of Ptolemy, who then chronicles Alexander's very colorful life. You have Val Kilmer playing a one-eyed version, which is almost Odin-ish, of King Philip of Macedonia, and the very controversial Jared Leto, who plays Hephaestion, who was Alexander's best friend, if you're going to be that way, and for those of us who know better, was Alexander's lifelong lover.
Mm-hmm.
Rosario Dawson plays Roxana, who was one of his wives. There is another, a beautiful, beautiful woman who also plays, and her name is Fiona O'Shaughnessy, and she actually plays one of the nurses, which is really interesting. And you have his other wife, who is the wife of, Darius, if you call him that. And she is later his wife. It's an interesting thing. They chronicle things from the beginning, from the problems that Alexander has with his father, and that his father married another woman. And his wife, his mother, is, of course, furious because she's the queen of Macedonia. And there's a whole horrible thing that goes on. Annalise Ermes, it plays Satyra, and that is the other young woman who is the other queen of Alexander's. She gives birth to his child, as does Rosaria Dawson's beautiful, beautiful Roxana. They say she's a lesser princess and what have you. Roxana was also one of the wives who comes from Persia. They messed that up in the movie somehow. What's interesting is that this is the exact same script that Richard Burton did in 1956. Before he did another movie that I happen to like a lot, which we will talk about tonight. But it's a very interesting thing. It's verbatim the same film, except that Ptolemy is more the narrator, and Anthony Hopkins is amazing throughout. They talk about all of Alexander's problems with his father, that even at the father's second marriage, Alexander and his father have terrible arguments. The father exiles Alexander and brings him back later to be his co-regent. And it's been rumored that Olympia, Alexander's first wife, Philip of Macedonia's first wife, plotted to have him killed. It's been never been proved, and let's face it, it's 2,000 odd years ago. Who's going to worry about it now? Okay? But in any case, Alexander's father, Philip, is murdered. Ptolemy and the other boys that are his generals, including a very young Jonathan Rhys Meyers, who later played Henry VIII at the Tudors and is wonderful, all of them yell, "Alexander, Alexander, Alexander," and he's made king of Macedonia. He goes on various and assorted battles to fight. He wants to take over Persia and the Persian Empire. So therefore, he goes after Darius. I was taught Darius as a child, and they throughout the whole movie called him Darius. I don't know which is correct.
In Greece, it's Darius.
Okay. Well, that would be probably more accurate. In any case, Alexander goes after him, and the first battle doesn't go so well. And then Alexander just develops what he called the phalanx, which are these long, huge spears, and he learns to put them forward. And he learns all different battle strategies. And later he does conquer the Persian Empire. And in the meantime, Darius is abandoned by his generals and actually killed and left in kind of a, I guess it's almost a carriage kind of thing. It looks kind of like a cart carriage, and he's left there. And Alexander thinks this is horrible, and he then attacks the other generals. The Persian generals has them all impaled, which I don't know if is actually true, but that's what they say, that he had them impaled and beheaded and horrible things. And then he goes and takes over Persia, and he goes to the Persian Empire where he meets Sisera, and his men go crazy because they also find the harem. And in the harem is not only beautiful girls, there are beautiful boys. And Alexander, who we know is probably at least bisexual, falls in love with a few of the boys that are there too, much to the disgust of his generals. According to Greek traditions, and Macedonian Greek traditions, it's all right for a young man to take young men or an old man to take young men as a lover. But you must marry, according to the Greek and the Macedonian traditions, and then all of that must stop so that you can produce children. Alexander and Hephaestion never stopped to the end of Hephaestion's life. So Alexander conquers the entire Persian Empire and goes down, and they cut out, which of course annoys me being an Egyptologist, goes down to Egypt, where he is hailed by the temple of Amun as Zeus, the son of Zeus Amon, because remember, his mother, Olympia, has said that all along that Philip of Macedonia was not really his father, but the god Zeus was. So that makes him your cousin, I guess, Hercules. You know how many children Zeus... Yeah, you guys are family. I mean, you know how many babies, Zeus had, right? In every form and function. I mean, every hero I can think of, yourself and Perseus and et cetera, et cetera. There are more children. Zeus is a very productive god.
Yes,
in any case.
What you said was truer than you know. I recently had a DNA test done. And although I am predominantly Greek, my DNA has the Mediterranean as a lake right in the middle of it. So I have blood from other places in Southern Europe, especially Italy, and also in the Western Asia, which is called Mikrasia or Small Asia in antiquity. It's now Turkey and Libya and places like that, and also North Africa as well, and including Egypt.
Well, as you know, I am mostly English and Polish and Austrian, but through my DNA test, we discovered I am Macedonian Greek, Egyptian, Greco-Egyptian. I have a link somewhere along the line, and it comes from my great-great-great-grandmother, whose name was Fatima Ptolemaeus, whose ancestors, they say, were servants of the Ptolemies.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Greek-Egyptian in me, too. But mostly English and Austrian and Polish. There's a very tiny little bit that's Egyptian, although I cling to it strongly, don't I?
I have a type of it too that that was in the caves in Siberia around the time shamanism was born, and also with the first people domesticated the horse. So we have the centaur thing going on. And then a strain of my Y chromosome is found by the people across the land bridge from Asia into America very early on. So I have the barbarian there too, which has been a...
So you're Native American as well too, indigenous American as it were.
Thousands of
I have,
years, yes.
Well, according to my mother's father, we had Shinnecock, which is a Long Island Native American, in our DNA too. I don't know how much of that's true. I don't find it in my tests, but my grandfather always insisted we did. In any case, Alexander wins many, many battles, and then the other generals get angry. He seems to be, as they say in the movie, going native. He dons coal eyeliner. He's dressing in long caftans. He's not looking very Greek. And he's not working with the Greek culture anymore. And the people of Macedon are mad. He's bringing back and sending back a great deal of treasure. But he's not going back to rule Macedon, and he's the king of Macedonia. So the Greeks and the Macedonians, remember, at that time, Greece was a vassal state of Macedonia.
And before then, Macedonians were considered barbarians. They were Greek culturally, but they were considered to be no better than savages.
So we had a problem with this. Now, I must say something. I ran away for a second. My co-host, whose name is Oliver, is a 10-month-old Abyssinian Egyptian temple cat, and he's being most unruly. He was chomping at something on the sink, and he was chewing on my jewelry-making tools. So I ran away for a second to kind of shoo him out of that. He has one bad... Oliver has one problem. The world revolves around Oliver.
and that's the way cats see it. The world revolves around each and every individual cat.
I am only here to serve him his breakfast and his dinner and clean up his litter box. That's my only function in life. I didn't know this until a couple of months ago, but I'm here to serve Oliver. So anyway, enough about Oliver.
We've had a life full of cats, so we know exactly what cats are like. And
I did too. Probably why I'm a very good priest of Bast. Oliver was born on May 7th, which is the opening of the Feast of Bast in the city of Bubastis in Egypt. So it was kind of interesting that he is that way also. In any case, Alexander's generals are given what's called satraps. They are made governor generals of different regions that Alexander has conquered. One of them, his greatest, I'll call him a protector, what have you, is someone that he's worked with all his life and is a general that was his father's general before him, and that's Parmenion. And Parmenion is Alexander's protector, guard, and what have you. But Alexander goes against him and his son Philotas and has them both killed. Alexander starts feeling paranoid that the other generals are after him. And the truth is they were. He was trying very hard not to let that look as though that were true, but it was true. And that was a very bad thing that happened. In any case, everybody knows that as Alexander got older, the people got more and more angry with him because he was less Greek and more, he was becoming Persian according to his people. And so they wanted to kill him, actually. And so what happens is Clytus is his other great general, again, someone who was part of Philip's entourage. And Clytus tells Alexander out and out directly, I don't like what you're doing. I don't like how you're dressing like a Persian and that you're cavorting with Persian men and women. You're not being Greek. You're not following the Hellenistic ways. You're taking these Asian ways, and we don't like it. And Alexander has made him a satrap, a governor of some of these far provinces closer to India. And, of course, Clytus wants to go home. He doesn't want to be a governor general. He wants to go home to his wife, and he has 8 children at the time. I've done some research. And so they get into a drunken brawl, and Alexander kills him with a spear. It's the same thing. It's very interesting. When I was watching the Richard Burton movie and this one, that scene is done exactly the same. And there's an argument in a palace. I guess it's the Persian palace. And Alexander drunkenly, gone, blind off his butt, decides to stab and kill Clytus. And then afterwards he bemoans and, you know, grieves about it and feels sad. But then he then defends himself that, you know, well, he was, you know, not doing what I wanted. He wasn't following the ways of things. Further down the way, probably about half an hour more into the show, the generals have all gotten together, and they say to Alexander, we've done miserably in the north of India, on the Punjab, actually, and they're all dying of malaria, snake bites, horrible things, and they want to go home. They don't want to go further into Asia. Alexander is, an egomaniacal king at that time, and all he wants is conquest, and he wants more power and more territories. And he thinks he's doing it for the glory of his nation. It's inferred in the movie that it's doing it for his own ego. Uh-huh. And the other generals have had enough. And so when they get back to Persia, which is a rough thing, they have a hell of a time. They have to cross over the mountains, and they cross through the desert, and they finally reach Persia, Babylon. And in the meantime, his lover passes away en route. That's Hephaestion. Hephaestion develops some kind of probably malaria or encephalitis or some other terrible. It's never been known. We've never found Hephaestion nor Alexander's body. But Hephaestion passes away. But in the meantime, Alexander is furious and upset. He thinks that they hastened Hephaestion's death. And Alexander, again, now is going to stay in Persia. He's not going back to Macedonia. And his mother keeps saying, make me the queen of Persia. Make me ruler. She's afraid for what's going on in Macedonia, because the Macedonians, in a way, I guess it's like a senate, has had enough of Alexander's nonsense. They want him to come home and be the king, which is not a bad thing to ask. In any case, he doesn't. He pushes the envelope. He's married a foreign princess. They all want him to marry a Macedonian Greek princess. They don't want this woman because she's, they say, from the Hindu Kush, which is really not true. She came from probably Punjab and possibly Pakistan. And they, you know, they want her out because she's, you know, she's not one of them. So Alexander gets very sick. He comes out and shows the people after a battle. He's been beaten very badly, and his horse, his magical horse that he loves, is killed. And Alexander comes out on the balcony. It's a huge scene, and he's wearing, looks like cheesecloth, and it's like, hello, guys, I'm here, I'm fine, and he's not fine. And then he has a drunken bout with a bunch of the generals, and they throw a party. We're going home now. We're going to go home. And they throw a gigantic party for him. And you see him looking into the cup. And in the cup, they believe, is poison. And Alexander drinks this. And shortly thereafter, he falls even sicker. And what they want to know at the end, he's lying dead on his, dying on his bed. He has a ring that Hephaestion had given him, which is his kingly ring. And they all want to know, who is his successor? And Alexander mumbles under his breath as he throws the ring into the air, the strongest. And what happens is, yes, Ptolemy talks about how they all scrambled, and Ptolemy took Egypt, and one of the other ones took another province, and another, and another. And so Ptolemy starts the Ptolemaic dynasty. And they show him in a beautiful palace, dressed more as an Egyptian than a Greek, and talking about his chronicle, and he never goes back to Macedonia either. His mother, Olympia, is murdered, as is Roxana, and Alexander's several-month-old son. And then there's a power struggle as to who becomes the king of Macedonia. They don't really tell you, which is strange. And it seems to be that after a while there's more battles and what have you. But we end the story there, and because Alexander's story is over. So we don't know what goes on further. Do you know, Hercules, what happened after Alexander in Macedonia?
I really don't remember. As I get older, the details of stories escape from my mind. But
we're going to have to get you blueberries. Blueberries are for memory.
I will add blueberries to my daily routine then. Yeah, as I get older, the stories blur. I remember a lot, but I don't remember everything. In some of the activities, some of the people in the audience or among the students remember more details than I do. So I just go with that.
Ah, well, I'm going to say to everybody that there was a power struggle. Ptolemy marries his first cousin, whose name is Berenike, and their first daughter's name is Cleopatra. She is Cleopatra the First. And that goes all the way 300 years later to Cleopatra the Seventh, and we won't get into that right now.
We only have a few more minutes left.
Right. So that is how that ends, though. They show the end of beginning of Ptolemy and his whole dynasty, and they show that Alexander's tomb is there in Alexandria.
Alexander had a tomb that was missing for many years. There are rumors that it's been found at various points in time. I haven't been keeping up on it, though. All of the territory that Alexander took were led by other Greeks who developed dynasties. And as you said, it all goes to the strongest, and none of them was strong enough to reclaim all the land that Alexander got.
No, it all fell apart right after he died. And Greece became its own state again. It was no longer a Macedonian province.
And Alexander gave us a land where for a little while communication took place, which later again got lost, unfortunately.
Like a Greek, in a way he was kind of a Greek King Arthur. You know, he one shining moment. And then it was gone.
Yes, and we'll touch upon that in other shows. Thank you for choosing this movie, and thank you for telling the tale in a very fact-filled and very entertaining fashion. You're getting a reputation for that, and it's well-deserved. How can people enter your world, Setna?
Very simply. The first way, well, after today, I don't know if you should do this anymore, but you can get me at Michael K. Waterman on Facebook, if it's working, as it were, or my phone a wizard, also on Facebook, or you can get me on my phone, which is the phone a wizard phone, 516-650-3691. You can write to me at mkwaterman@icloud.com or at my home, where I have my new temple, which is Michael Waterman at 1699 Chatham Parkway, Chatham Parkway, apartment 1523A, Savannah, Georgia, 31405. This is a lovely, beautiful world, and I'm very glad to do that. You can also get me either on Instagram or TikTok. You can write me for the other things to find out what those numbers are and names are. And you can reach me through Hercules, of course.
Thank you so very much, and I'm glad you're joining in the health discussions as well. were of an age, I think we're within the same year. Were you born in 1959?
58.
58. Okay, so you have some months on me on the planet. It accounts for your greater wisdom. I'll invite you to those conversations as well. And I thank you very much. And I thank also our wonderful audience for tuning in. Until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures to all. And may 2024 be better than 2023. Thank you, everybody, and good night.
Good night, all. Blessed be.
Blessed be.